Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 29. I'm going to cover the first 25 verses of that chapter. We're going to see how Jacob marries Leah in Haran. Our context is this. In the previous chapter, we heard about the famous story of Jacob's ladder. He has been sort of kicked out of Beersheba. Well, he ran from Beersheba because he heard his brother Esau was after him because Jacob had cheated Esau out of Esau's inheritance. So we start now in Genesis 29, 1 through 3, as Jacob is heading to Haran. Verse 1, then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the sons of the east. He looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it. For from that well they watered the flocks. Now the stone on the mouth of the well was large. When all the flocks were gathered there, they would then roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. Now in verse 1 it says, Jesus came to the land of the sons of the east. This is after a journey of about 400 miles, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, coming from Beersheba. I've seen another estimate. It's a little bit more than 400 miles, but it was a long, long way. He came to the land of the sons of the east. Anything that's mentioned in Old Testament scriptures, the east is the region beyond the Euphrates River. Got three sites for that. And of course, and more particularly, he was at Haran, which is the famous city there that is still there today. I've mentioned a description of Haran many times in previous audios, so I won't talk about it too much, just to say it's in Syria to the east of the Euphrates River. It's where Abraham left to go to the promised land years before. Now, Jacob shows up at a well there in the field. And just as in the case with Abraham's servant, probably Eliezer, who stopped at the well, and it might have been the same well at Haran, stopped at a well to try to find out where Abraham's relatives were so he could find Rebekah. Same thing happened here, because it was customary to meet inhabitants of a town near the local watering hole, as John Gill says. This place, this well, is called the Well of Haran. It's the well that watered Haran. Now, there were three flocks of sheep that were lying besides this well. Those did not belong to Laban, Rebekah's brother, Jacob's uncle, because his flock was yet to show up yet. Rachel's going to bring them in a little bit. There was a stone in verse 2 on top of this well. Why was there a stone in the mouth of the well? Well, there was strong evaporation in that arid climate. You put a stone on top of the well, there's less evaporation. Also, shifting sands can foul the well. The stone would seal the well up from sand getting blown into the water. Adam Clark points out that bad people could poison a well. You put a stone on it, it's hard to poison the well. Now, the stone was so heavy it took about three people to move the stone. Now, why is this detail included? We'll see that when we get to verses 7 and 8, so we'll hold off until there to talk about this stone. Now, let's go to verses 4, 5, and 6 of Genesis 29. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" Jacob said to them, the shepherds that were there, and they, the shepherds, said, "We are from Haran." He said to them, Jacob said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And he, Jacob, said to the shepherds, "Is it well with him?" And the shepherds said, "It is well, and here is Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep." Now, when Jacob is asking about Laban, he's asking about his uncle, because remember, his mother is Rebekah, and Rebekah's brother is Laban. Now, Rebekah is his mother, and Rebekah's father was Bethuel. Bethuel was not asked for. He's probably old, incapacitated, dead, as John Gill says. That might have even been true when Abraham's servant, probably Eliezer, had come for Rebekah. Bethuel was probably gone because Abraham's servant negotiated for Rebekah with Laban, just like Jacob's getting ready to do. So Bethuel's gone. Now, Rachel and Jacob were first cousins. Laban was the brother of Rebekah. Rebekah was Jacob's mother. Laban was Rachel's father, and that made Rachel and Jacob first cousins. So he was going to fall in love with his first cousin. Back then, that was okay. No problem with consanguinity, big gene pool, no problems with deformed offspring. Now, in verse 5, Jacob said to the shepherds, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" That's actually the grandson. Here's how the genealogy worked. Abraham had a younger brother named Nahor. Nahor married Milcah, the daughter of Abraham's older brother Haran. Then Milcah and Nahor had Bethuel, and Bethuel had Rebekah, and then Rebekah had Jacob. So Laban is not the son of Nahor. Laban is the grandson of Nahor. That's common in genealogy. Son is often put for grandson. And son often sometimes means even a descendant, even further down the line than that. So we can't take that too literally. The NIV actually translates it grandson. The Hebrew word for son can mean any male descendant, as the NIV Study Bible says. Now in verse 6, we have Jacob speaking to these shepherds. Now I know a lot of people don't think about this too much, but there might have been a language problem here. Laban spoke Chaldee, whatever that was. I'm not familiar with that language. The language is spoken in Mesopotamia at that time. Jacob spoke Hebrew. We see the differences in language when Laban and Jacob made their treaty and built their memorial in Genesis 31:47. Now Laban called it Jagar Sahudutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Different languages. How was this language barrier solved? Well, Hebrew and Chaldee had many words in common. Chaldee was Rebekah's mother tongue, and so Jacob could have learned it from her. I've lived in China, and people learn how to communicate. Sometimes they develop pidgin languages. I remember one time I was in a taxi in the west of China in a place called Yingchuan, and I was taking a taxi to go back home, and I was speaking Chinese to the taxi driver, telling him how to get to my house, and he would look at me and say something. I said, man, my Chinese is worse than I thought it was. I cannot understand this guy. And so I kept talking to him and kept trying to explain to him where we're going. And I could sort of understand him, but not quite. I found out later he wasn't speaking Putong. He wasn't speaking Mandarin. He was speaking a local Yingchuan dialect. But the dialect was close enough to Mandarin that I could make it out. And I got home okay. So that's how people with different languages learn how to get along with each other. Genesis 29, verses 7 and 8. He, that's Jacob, said, behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep and go pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered and they roll the stone from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. Now, I must say, I have spent a lot of time puzzling over this verse, couldn't figure out what's going on, and I finally have got it. Here's what's happening. It's in the middle of the day, generally in the middle of the day, the sheep would be out eating grass in the pasture. Then in the end of the day, they would get some water at the well. Then they would go be put up in their sheepfolds, their pens. Well, the gathering of the sheep to drink water and to be put up in the sheepfolds is usually done at night or in the evening, late in the evening. But here it's in the middle of the day, high day. And so Jacob can't figure out, what are you gathered here to get water for? That's not supposed to happen till the end of the day. So he says, water the sheep and go pasture them. In other words, go send them out to eat grass. Go pasture them and put the sheep back to work what they normally do. Don't put them up for the night in the sheepfold. It's the middle of the day. And the shepherds responded, we can't do that till all the flocks are gathered and they roll the stone from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. All right, one man could move the rock. It took two or three. Jacob wasn't aware of this. He said, why don't you just move the rock and take your sheep and go? Well, no, they couldn't do that. But as a shepherd, he was given advice as to what shepherds normally do. And I think to myself, this is a stranger in a strange land telling people how to do their business is kind of a little bit cheeky, if you ask me. It could be, as Albert Barnes said, that Jacob wanted to get rid of the shepherd so he could be alone with Rachel. Or it could have just been a custom that they gather collectively before watering the sheep. It could be there was a reason for them gathering collectively before watering the sheep, to ensure the fair distribution of the water. No one was allowed to go first, so everybody had to wait on everybody else, so they all had to be there together when they took the stone off. So Jacob was asking these shepherds to do something they normally don't do, which is individually water the sheep and then leave. That word gathered there in verse 7, it's not time for the livestock to be gathered. That means gathered to be put into the sheepfolds at the end of the day, as Ellicott states. What's confusing about this verse is that word pasture, gather and pasture. Gather is to gather them together to put in the sheepfolds at night. And pasture means what you do during the day. You put them out in the field so they can eat. Two different things. We go to Genesis 29:9. While he, that's Jacob, was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, in the ancient Middle East, it was customary for women as well as men to be shepherds. And so this was not a surprise to see a young woman there. Young women were not kept concealed in the house until married. We have this idea of the ancient East that's what women did, or in Greece, for example. Women were not that pinned up. A lot of times from our culture, we tend to think that they were pinned up, but they weren't. It was not beneath the dignity of daughters of rich men to do this work, as Adam Clark said, so that was not a surprise. What does the name Rachel mean? It means a sheep, a female sheep. NIV Study Bible says it means an ewe or a ewe, E-W-E, ewe, a female sheep. Well, these are shepherds. She's from a family of shepherds. It would make sense that one would name his daughter after a sheep. To me, I wouldn't name my daughter after a sheep. That seems a little bit derogatory or not honorable enough. But back then, there's a different culture. They thought differently. We go to verse 10, Genesis 29. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, in other words, his uncle, Uncle Laban, we'll call him. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Laban, and the sheep of Uncle Laban, Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Well, now, things are looking up for Jacob as he has left the promised land. He's now outside of the promised land, in the promised land. His brother Esau was trying to kill him, but here he had a pleasant reception with his relatives. Of course, he had a vision with God on the way. Go, go, go. Get out of Dodge. That was it. Jacob's ladder and Bethel. However, we need to remember Jacob eventually came back to the promised land. The promised land was his destiny, the seed, the land, the seed, the offspring, the blessing of the nations. Now, when Jacob saw Rachel, he knew who she was because in verse 6, which we've already read, we read this, is he Laban well? Jacob asked, yes, they, the shepherds by the well, said, and here is Laban's daughter Rachel coming with his sheep. So he'd already been tipped off that this was Rachel. He knew who he was talking to. He knew he was talking to his first cousin. And so he wants to be chivalrous and nice to her. So he rolls the stone away so she can get some water. Now, some options here are how he did that. The NIV Study Bible says he did it by himself, which would be a feat of unusual strength for one man. I don't believe that. John Gill and Adam Clark say, no, he did it with the help of the other shepherds. And that's more reasonable to me because Jacob wasn't known for being the he-man type. If you recall in earlier chapters, he used to hang around the tents at home while his brother Esau went out and hunted and planted crops, and he hung around the tents with his mama. He was a mama's boy. He might have done some shepherding too. So I might be exaggerating a little bit, but, he doesn't seem the he-man type. And the stone was big and heavy. Somebody probably helped him. But at any rate, he was the one that took the initiative, and I'm sure Rachel appreciated that. Why did Jacob do this? He wanted to give respect. He wanted to give a sign of respect to Laban, as John Gill says. Laban was a wealthy man, and Jacob wanted to be allied by marriage with this wealthy man. So what do? You do the diplomatic, courteous thing. Or he might not have wanted to impress Laban so much as he might have wanted to impress Rachel. The romantic part of me says that's what he was doing. I don't know how much romance played in all this transactions for brides back then. But at any rate, moving that stone was a job that took time and labor, so it was no small service that Jacob did for Rachel, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. We go down to Genesis 29, verses 11 through 14. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted his voice and wept. Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Her father, of course, is Laban. So when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, his sister being Rebekah, he heard the news of his nephew, in other words, Jacob. He, Laban, ran to meet him, Jacob, and embraced him. Laban embraced Jacob and kissed him, kissed Jacob, and brought him to his house, brought him to Laban's house. Then Jacob related to Laban all these things. Then he, Jacob, related to Laban all these things. Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh, and he stayed with him a month. Well, first of all, in verse 11, Jacob kissed Rachel. He's never met her before. It's not the first date. It's the first time he ever laid eyes on her. He smacks her. Whoa, how cheeky. Well, this was not an amorous kiss. This was, how the French people kiss the air next to your cheek all the time. That's kind of what this was. They were first cousins, after all, and they knew that. Jacob might have had in the back of his mind that God had providentially provided for him a wife. You might be thinking, my ship has come in. This is her. We found out later that she was beautiful of face and form. And so you might have thinking, ooh, this is as hot shepherdess hair coming up here. She looks so nice. I'm going to give her a kiss. No, I don't think it's that way at all. I think he just kissed her because he's crying while he's doing it, too. So he's just saying, oh, my goodness, I've met my relatives amidst all these pagans. He wept. He wept for joy, of course, and not for sadness. Rachel's pretty excited, too, because she ran back and told her father. This is just like Rebekah ran from the same well. She ran back after talking to Abraham's servant, probably Eliezer. She ran back to tell Laban, well, tell her mother at the time, actually. Whoa, we got a relative coming and wants to marry somebody. Well, she didn't say that, but she said, we got a relative coming. He's wealthy. He's not a relative. He's a servant of the relative. And he's got 10 camels with gold and silver and good stuff. That's what Rebecca went through. And here, Rachel ran back. Now, Jacob didn't have any money at the time. He was poor. But she knew that Jacob, her first cousin, was in town, and she probably knew what was up. I just suspect she knew. Now, the fact that she ran to her father instead of to her mother means that Laban's wife was probably gone, probably dead at this time. Now, at the response of that running, Laban ran too. He ran back to Jacob at the well, put his arms around him, hugged him, embraced him, kissed him, brought him back to the house. Why did he meet Jacob that way? Why did he run to meet Jacob? John Gill suggests, well, he was sincerely glad to see a relative. That might be one motive. Could be, but if you want to be a little bit more cynical, as I am, it could be because of avarice that Laban ran to meet his nephew Jacob. He was maybe expecting rich presents. After all, he got rich presents before, and the last time there was a visit from Abraham's family in the Promised Land in Canaan, 10 camels with gold and silver presents, bracelets around Rebekah's two wrists, a nose ring, either in Rebekah's nose or on Rebekah's nose, but there were presents, and he was probably thinking, hot dog, more money. Of course, he'd probably be disappointed when he found out Jacob didn't have any money, but he ended up getting his labor, at least, if he didn't get any gold and silver. Now, Jacob told him all these things in verse 13. What might that be? Well, all the stuff we've read about here in the previous chapter, the dream at Bethel, Jacob's ladder. He probably told Laban that Esau was trying to kill him, and that's why I'm heading out of the Promised Land. I'm heading over here. Can you give me a job? Although he didn't say that yet. He may have mentioned he was looking for a wife, or maybe hinted at it. Gil says he probably hinted at the fact he was looking for a wife. We don't know. We can only speculate. He stayed there for a month. In verse 14, it says, Jacob stayed with him, with Laban, for a month. Now, here's the custom among pastoral people about visiting people, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. The visitor got free entertainment for 3 days. On the fourth day, the guest states his name and business. And on the fifth day, he starts to work. So, Jacob stayed for a month. He had already stayed longer than the usual time without stating his business. Now, he was working. We know that because verse 15, it sounds like verse 15. Let me read that. Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? That might be that Jacob's already working, but he could be talking about the future. You can work for me for nothing. That might have been when they started talking about it. So that doesn't prove anything that he was already working. But at any rate, it took a long time to state his business. Maybe he was nervous about approaching Laban about Rachel. I remember when I went to talk to my father-in-law about marrying my wife, I was just a little bit on edge. Genesis 29, verses 15 and 16. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Let's talk about Leah first. It's not clear what the Hebrew that's translated Leah means. Here's some options. The NIV Study Bible says her name means cow, C-O-W, cow. Now, isn't that a heck of a name to give your daughter? Hey, cow. But the NIV Study Bible says that name was appropriate for a herdsman's family. Well, that's true. I mean, if you're going to name Rachel female sheep, why not name Leah cow? Gil says the word could mean labor or weariness, but that seems strange to me. Why would anybody name their daughter labor or weariness? I don't believe that. I believe it. We're just going to say it means cow. And as I said, Rachel means ewe. Appropriate names for a shepherd family. Now, Laban is asking for wages, probably because he wants Jacob to stay. Jacob had probably impressed Laban with the good work he was doing, good work Jacob was doing. Laban probably wanted Jacob to stay around and do shepherd's work. Many people, as Adam Clark says, many people say that Laban was tight, if not downright covetous. Well, as we'll see what he does, I don't really think too much about Laban. I think he was a shyster. We go to Genesis 29, verses 17 and 18. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you, Laban, 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Now, this is totally a minor point, but I just did a wonderful Bible study on Leah's eyes. He says Leah's eyes were weak. What does that mean, her eyes were weak? Does it mean she was nearsighted? Well, here's what John Gill says, quote, she was, quote, blear-eyed, had a moisture in them which made them red, and so she was not so agreeable to look at. So weak means reddish, teary. That's what Gil says. This is what Adam Clark says. Some say that weak means soft, delicate, and lovely. Now, the problem with that view is if you say that Oh, Leah's eyes were soft, delicate, and lovely, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. I guess what you'd be saying is Leah had the advantages in the eye category, but Rachel had the advantages in the face category and in the figure category. So I guess that's a possible translation, although it probably makes more sense to think ugly Leah, beautiful Rachel, so weak means ugly rather than beautiful. Some commentator, I forgot to write his name down, said that Leah's eyes, the word means soft blue eyes, which were thought a blemish. I guess back then they liked those dark brown eyes, and blue eyes like Scandinavians had would be, ooh, what's wrong with those eyes? Is something wrong with those blue eyes? Cultural thing, maybe. Well, so I looked up the translations to see, and it turned out that some of the translations translate weak eyes in a positive manner, and some translate weak eyes in a negative manner. Here's the King James. I'm going to give you four translations that translate it positively. The King James Version says that Leah was tender-eyed. Ooh, that sounds so nice. The Holman Christian Study Bible in the New King James says that Leah's eyes were delicate. Oh, how nice. The American Standard Version says that Leah's eyes were tender. On the other hand, we can find some negative translations. The Amplified Version says that Leah's eyes were weak and dull looking. The Lexham translation says that Leah's eyes were dull. The Revised Standard Version says that Leah's eyes were weak. So, take your choice. I report, you decide. I don't know about Leah's eyes. I do know this. I feel sorry for Leah a little bit. Now, Leah was not perfect in what she did here, as we'll see, but She got shafted by her father. She got shafted all the way around. And notice she was competing with her beautiful younger sister. Now, this is an old story, and how many movies have been made on that theme? Beautiful form and face. Now, the question we ask, did Jacob love her just for her looks? Sure sounds like it. I don't think so. John Gill speculates that Rachel, he doesn't have evidence for this, he's just speculating. He speculates that she was also, quote, modest, humble, affable, diligent, and industrious. Well, in verse 20, it says that he spent 7 years with her and they passed as a few days. That shows that more than looks were involved. He liked her personally. They got along great. And that's 7 years without sex, my friends. A man will forget about looks very quickly after getting to know the woman he loves, and he just loved Rachel, and she was beautiful, and that's nice, but looks are not going to carry you very far, all you pretty women who might be listening to this audio. It doesn't matter that much. Now, the pretty women have an advantage in that they attract men quicker, but the problem is they attract the wrong kind of men, and pretty women, unfortunately, rely on their looks, and they don't develop their character. I could tell you, I was in a homeroom in my high school, and I had the girls in my homeroom were the prettiest girls in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, they were gorgeous, and I was an ugly nerd, and I could just look, but I couldn't talk to because I was too afraid. Well, after 50 years of high school reunions and seeing what happened to those girls, some of them were dead. Some, I remember one, she was so beautiful, got beat up in the head, just beat up by her husband. And some of them were so beautiful, ended up being fat and ugly when they got old. I mean, you know, being beautiful is not going to carry you, and it didn't carry Rachel. So she must have had some other characteristics besides being beautiful. All right, that's the first little point I want to make. The second point I want to make is that there's nothing wrong with being beautiful. The Bible just very clearly says she was beautiful in form and figure. There's nothing wrong with being beautiful in the face and beautiful with your curves. Nothing wrong with that. That's fine. Now, Jacob agrees to serve with Laban for 7 years' work. Why did Jacob need to do this? Wasn't he wealthy? Hadn't he inherited a double portion of Isaac's wealth? Hadn't he snookered his older brother Esau out of the inheritance? And hadn't Isaac blessed Jacob and given him all that money? Well, the answer to that is he couldn't take the flocks with him when he ran from Canaan. That's my view. I didn't read that anywhere, but that's my speculation. And so he arrived in Haran penniless. Now, since he was penniless, he didn't have any money for a bride price. The custom back then in the ancient Near East was for the husband to give money, or the husband's family, to give money to the bride's family. There was a reason for that, to show that the husband had enough money to take care of the bride, because the bride didn't have anywhere. She couldn't go out on the marketplace and make money. There was no place for her to work. So she needed the money, and the bride price, in the Middle Ages they called it the curtsy, the bride price was necessary to show the girl's father that this man meant business, he was financially stable, and he could support his daughter. I mean, I've had two daughters, and when I found out they were about to get married, the very first question that arose in my mind is, how will you support my daughter? Well, Jacob didn't have any money to show that he could support Laban's daughter, so he offered his labor instead. He was obviously a very skilled shepherd, as we'll see later. Now, this custom, by the way, makes a lot more sense than the custom in the Middle Ages. In the Middle Ages, it was backwards. If a girl wanted to get married, she had to have a dowry, which went from the bride's family to the husband's family. And that, of course, made women very much a financial burden to a family because they had to provide a dowry for her, and therefore, families didn't want to have girls. It made girls less valuable than men, so it was backwards. It was wrong. It just screwed up things. And in fact, in Western medieval, wives were considered not useful. They were purposely kept uneducated, and in order to make them attractive to a man, the father had to throw in some money with the deal. But here in the ancient Near East, the wife was considered valuable because she was going to provide heirs, and that's extremely valuable back then because, as you know, having a baby, was a son, was about worth more than anything in the world because they were so short a population. And to get a wife, you had to, she was valuable, so you had to give something valuable, namely the bride price. Well, Jacob didn't have the bride price, so he offered his labor. So now we go to verses 19 and 20. 20 and 21 in Genesis 29. Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go in to her." Now, John Gill says as Laban was deceitful right from the get-go when he agreed at the beginning of that 7 years for Jacob to work for him. Gill says that Laban was meaning to deceive Jacob from the start. He meant to give Jacob Leah instead of Rachel. And of course, why would he want to do that? Well, the motive was probably to get his older daughter married off first, which was the custom back then, I think. I know it's the custom in China. I know the Eastern civilization that I know about. I remember one particular family, the younger daughter just would not get married. I said, "Why don't you get married? She'd been engaged to this guy for 100 years. I thought she would never get married." And she said, "Well, my older sister doesn't want to get married yet, and I got to wait." I said, "Your older sister, she doesn't want to get married. She's never going to get married. And if she doesn't get married, you're not going to get married. What's that going to do for the descendants? Don't you want to have sons?" So, anyway, I forgot how. Well, she finally did it. She finally got married out of order. And then the older daughter finally got married, too. But I remember it was causing a big problem. She was in a traditional type family. So that's probably what Laban is thinking. "I want to get my older daughter married off. Plus, Rachel is beautiful of form and figure." He might have figured, I can get her married off easy, but old weak-eyed Leah, I'm not so sure. Old cow, my cow daughter here, I'm not sure I can get rid of her. Maybe I can offload her on to Jacob. Now, the 7 years that Jacob passed that seemed just like a few days because of Rachel, because of his love for Rachel, this shows that Rachel was there in the vicinity. She was living amongst the family, and so it's not like it was 7 years in hard labor in a prison somewhere. He was doing his job, and every day he'd come back, and there's Rachel. She's there, you know, so he got to be friends with her for 7 years. No sex, but they got to be close. Now, in verse 21, after 7 years, Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife." Now, he probably should have said, "Give me Rachel," but he probably wasn't figuring Laban was going to snooker him like that. But if he had said, "Give me Rachel," it would have made it a little bit more egregiously disgusting if Laban had substituted Leah for Rachel. But he said, "Give me my wife." And Laban said, "Okay, I'll give you your wife. It's not going to be Rachel, though." Now, verse 21, the NASB has Jacob saying, give me my wife that I may go into her. Go into her is just a euphemism for have sex with her, have relations with her. As the NIV says, to lie with her. After 7 years, I hate to say this, but Jacob is probably getting pretty antsy, probably got a little testosterone backed up. However, as I think about this, most people think he was 77 years old when he showed up in Haran, and now this is 7 years later. He could be 84 years old getting ready to, and he's going to end up having 12 kids from 84 years old? I don't think so. John Gill says there's some people that speculate he was only 57 years old, so I don't think Jacob is like Abraham. You can figure out how old Abraham was, Ishmael was, Jacob was, Sarah was. It's, you know, you can just do the numbers from what you are told in the text of Genesis, but you can't do that with Jacob. So he's somewhere between 57 and 84 years old, but he's probably ready to start his family. He's probably backed up. 7 years he kept Rachel honorably. Now, you know, that says something. People say, well, I just got to have sex, man, just to show I love her. Yeah, right. Oh, he wants me to have sex with me because he loves me and I need to show him I love him so I can have sex with him after two dates. I'm a virtuous girl. I'm going to have sex on the first date. You got to have me on the second date. Yeah, that's the modern age, folks. But in Jacob's day, those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. Jacob has also got to worry about the patriarchal promises of seed, offspring. He's supposed to have seed as numerous as the sand and as numerous as uncountable as the stars in the sky. And he had even got started. He hasn't got his first kid yet. So he's ready to go. But unfortunately, some bad stuff happens. Genesis 29, verses 22 through 25. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. This is the marriage feast. And the place is Haran. Now in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, brought Leah to Jacob, and Jacob went into Leah. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me? Now, the first question we have to ask ourselves is, how in the world did Jacob have sex with Leah and not know it was Leah? Got three ways to explain that. That used to bother me, but I think I could explain it pretty good. The first reason is due to modern Eastern customs. Here's the custom. This is from John Gill. The bridegroom goes to bed first. It's dark in the bedroom. The bride is brought to him in the dark, and she has a veil on. And she keeps that veil on until she gets into bed. And the custom was that modesty forbade the bride from saying a word to the groom. So she comes in there silent, in the dark, with her head covered with veil. And even if she'd said anything, her voice very well might have sounded like Rachel's. I don't know, but she probably was quiet. And so Jacob didn't know who he was getting it on with. And here's a second reason why I think that Jacob didn't find out. I would think that Leah would want to perpetuate this fraud because it was in her interest to do so. She'd get married. She'd get married to a man that she had known for 7 years and who was a good shepherd, a hard worker and so forth, and she'd get married. Married with somebody in her family and not with the pagans around her. Another reason she might want to perpetuate the fraud is that she had to do what her father told her. The girls, I'm sure, back then were pretty submissive to their fathers, and the father says, you go in there and snooker your first cousin Jacob because this is what I want to do. Now, it could be that Laban had misled Leah. Laban could have told Leah that Jacob was working for Leah, 7 years for Leah. This is John Gill's idea, but I find that hard to believe. Leah could easily observe that Jacob was in love with Rachel. All he had to do was look at him and look at the sparks that flew between them when they looked into each other's eyes. She had 7 years to watch that. She knew that she wasn't loved. She knew that Rachel was the love of Jacob's life. So I think she knew exactly what she was doing when she went into that bed with Jacob. But she did it because her father told her to do it, and she had no choice. Well, I say she had no choice. Think about it. She could have said, no, I'm not going to do it, Dad. Ooh, I don't know how that would have gone over, but I suspect she didn't want to do that because then she'd lose her husband. So I think her motives were mainly, I'm going to carry out this fraud because I want to get married. Now, John Gill says the fact that she would betray her own sister like that doesn't speak very well of Leah, and I tend to agree. I mean, I understand her position. She was unloved. She wanted to get a husband, but still, do you defraud somebody like that? No, I don't think so. Another reason why Jacob might not have realized it was Leah he was having sex with is because Jacob had probably drunk a good bit at the feast. It was a wedding feast. Everybody drinks. He might have been a little tipsy. Who knows? That's my idea. I didn't read that in a commentary anywhere. Jacob asked in verse 25, he asked Laban, why have you deceived me? And I mentioned earlier, the reason why was probably because he wanted to get his older daughter married off, who was hard to marry off, and she was the oldest daughter. Now, notice this word deceived. Jacob says, why then have you deceived me? Jacob was probably as surprised when he sees Leah in the morning as Isaac was when he discovered that Isaac had blessed Jacob instead of Esau. Ho, ho, ho. What goes around comes around. Jacob, the great deceiver, has become the deceived. The one who tricked the firstborn, Esau, had the firstborn, Leah, trick him. So he was a firstborn tricker, and now he is tricked by the firstborn. Remember, his name means deceiver. Well, now he's the one that was deceived by Laban. Now, all this deception is not going to end because Jacob later on is going to deceive Laban back again in the matter of the spotted sheep, which we'll get to when we get to Genesis 32. I'm going to take it up here. Now, let's talk about Zilpah. She was the mother of some of the patriarchs. And so we probably ought to mention her. She was given as a maid to Leah. This was the custom back then, a wedding gift to the bride. If you recall in the case of Hagar, Hagar belonged to Sarah. That was the ancient Near East custom. The female slaves like that belonged to the wife, and the husband had no power over those slaves. Only the mother did, the wife did, as Adam Clark points out. And this idea that the woman slave belongs to the wife and not to the husband is a wedding custom, and these slaves were given to the bride for a wedding present. And this was a wedding custom documented in old Babylonian wedding contracts, as the NIV Study Bible says. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to stop it right there. We'll take it up in our next audio and talk about Jacob marrying Rachel, the love of his life. We will do that in Genesis 29, verses 26 through 35. Finished chapter 29 of Genesis. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.